The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, right now. On 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle live in studio, waiting to take your calls on virtually anything that's going on with your health. Perhaps you've had a problem, you've tried, you've applied, you've done everything you can think of. Well, guess what? Here's what we're going to do for you. We're going to give you opportunity. Give us a call. And happily, we're going to be talking about something that is a bugaboo to many of you, something that you've gone out and you've done the wrong application. What we're talking about, we're calling it surgery, you know, on your neck or your low back, and you still have the same problems. They haven't gone away. Unfortunately, in our Western culture, our Western civilization, sometimes we jump too quickly to have the knife put to our spine. And, you know, what they call successful surgery in this country is about 50%, meaning that 50% of you will either get a little bit better or you get a lot better, but the other 50% don't get any better at all, or it comes back over a period of time and becomes much more significant, much more serious. There's a problem with that, and we're going to discuss it today at length, and we'd like to have your input. But in studio, to help me talk about that, none other than the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning, guy who has more brains than anybody should be allowed to have. Anyway, Dr. Browning.
Okay, good morning, Tom. Always good to be here with you.
Good to see you, my friend. It's a fun process when we go through and we start picking apart things. But, you know, this is one of the more interesting views of failed applications in medicine, simply because of the fact that, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that get cut that they shouldn't have been cut in the first place. There's a whole lot more that they can do, and we're going to talk about that. But let's talk about this failed back surgery, failed neck surgery, and there's, you know, the terminology they use is failed back surgery syndrome. What does that really mean? What are we talking about here?
Well, it's like what you said before. It basically means that the person had some sort of surgical procedure, and we'll talk about the different procedures that we commonly see as in our office. It means that the person either did not get better or they got possibly worse, or they acquired some other type of problem after the procedure, because there's always complications on the back end.
You know, that's a problem with anything, whether you're taking a medication or you don't do the right procedure, or the procedure, as you said, fails. It's that side effect that shows up after the fact. Dr. Browning, when you look at a person who has failed back surgery, as you said, it's a symptom process that begins to return, or it never went away. Why? What's going on here? What I mean, medical technology today supposedly is at a level of appreciation that we never had before, but here we've got something that they said they can do, and they're putting rods and screws and spacers and all kinds of things in, or removing disc spaces or fusing things up, and now nothing's happened.
Well, I think first you need to look at the low back itself, and there's a lot of pain generators in the spinal area. So muscles can cause pain, nerves can cause pain, ligaments, joints can cause pain. So it becomes kind of gray to identify what the exact cause of a person's low back pain is. If a person has sciatica, or they have referred pain down the leg or the arm, we could almost always say that's going to be caused by a nerve. But if we just have mechanical low back pain, we have pain in the low back, maybe it goes into our buttocks area, it becomes really difficult to say, okay, what exactly is causing it? Is it the disc that's maybe bulging a little bit? Is it the arthritis that the person has? Is it the thickening of the ligaments in their back? I mean, it can be any of those. So I think you need to have a proper diagnosis, and more importantly, you can't sell the farm on the MRI, meaning I see lots of MRIs that look horrific on people, but yet they have very little pain and they're super high functional. So you need to make sure that your examination matches your MRI and definitely needs to match what the person is telling you as far as their symptoms. Because if not, then you're going to go down a rabbit hole trying to fix something that is not necessarily causing the problem.
The presence of stenosis, and here's what I'm hearing you say, the presence of spinal stenosis or a protruded disc or a slightly herniated disc is not necessarily the causative factor of back pain or leg pain.
It doesn't have to be, no.
So there's other things that have to be taken into consideration when we're dealing with. So, you know, when a physician says, I think we need to do surgery, at that point, my brain says, I think I need to have about three or four other opinions and try something very conservatively. You know, we have a very dear friend who's a neurosurgeon, and he's an interesting guy because if we send 10 cases over to him that we think might need to be evaluated for surgery, historically he may operate on one, maybe two, and he'll ask him the question, did you do everything that Dr. Browning asked you to do? Did you do the acupuncture? Did you do manipulation? Did you do spinal decompression? And if the answers are no, 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 he said, go back and do them and then talk to me. Because once you're cut, you're cut.
Yeah. So, I mean, the overriding factor usually is levels of impairment. So, obviously, when someone's in a lot of pain, that's a big deal to them. But a big deal to us, a big deal to orthopedics, to the neurosurgical community is, do they have an impairment? Impairment meaning they show weakness. They can't feel the arm or the leg. They can't walk. They can't stand. Those are things that are telling us that there's something very significant going on. So if a person is just really dealing with pain, you need to take a step back before you start to get aggressive with what you're going to do to try to so-called fix the problem.
This Wednesday evening, the 8th of August already, Dr. Harlan Browning will be your host, your presenter at the Rozell Center for Healing in Fairfax, 7 p.m. The weather's still good. Come and see us. Failed back surgery. If you've had spinal surgery of any sort and it hasn't worked for you and you still have pain, this is an opportunity. You need to show up and find out what your opportunities are, what your options are. Just go to rozellecare.com. That's rozellecare.com, or simply call 703-698-7117 and register for this class. As you know, when we're full, we're full, and you know, we usually don't repeat the class, so 703-698-7117. Dr. Harlan, let's take this one step further down the rabbit hole, so to speak. You know, before the surgery happens, and, you know, the doctor's talking surgery, and, you know, they've got this unremitted pain, what types of things do you look at that you say, you know, it can be this, it can be this? How does it show up, and how do you differentiate it from a patient who needs surgical intervention?
You definitely look at the history of the problem. You know, how long have they had it? Is there been multiple traumas that might have initiated this that kind of gotten better but never really went away? And how is it changing their quality of life? In other words, are they doing things differently than they used to do before? Or maybe they're not doing things at all that they should be doing, like exercising, or they're avoiding going up and down stairs. So you need to look at the big picture to make sure that they're not changing their life and just moving forward just to accommodate the problem.
You know, I started with a patient about a week ago, 10 days ago. No, it's been a couple of weeks now. Time passes very, very rapidly. And this is a man who is an old aviator and a lot of aircraft landings and so forth. And he had spinal pain, back pain, leg pain, and to the point where that calf was still always problematic. Little bit of resolution in the low back and the pelvic area, but still persistent. And it's been going on for quite some time. He's gone through multiple physical therapy sessions and so forth with really no resolution. So he walks into our office, and the guy's a little skeptical. He's in his late 70s and still in great shape, phenomenal shape. And we started treating him, and for the first time in years, his pain is just about gone in his leg. He has functional range of motion. He is looking forward to starting to play golf again. But when you identify it properly and you work around these failed surgical conditions, those things are possible.
Absolutely. And again, it's you need to look at what has the person done that's actually worked for them? What have they done that didn't help, maybe even made it worse? And maybe look at the combination of the therapies that they used over time. Maybe those therapies were all good, but they just weren't put into place in the right order. And I see that a lot because we have patients that come in that have been to everybody, and they're like, well, how are you going to treat me differently? What you're telling me is similar to what everybody else told me. Well, it's very often that the combination of the therapies that we use is different. We do one thing before the other to more or less clear the pathway to do the next step. So it's a big puzzle, and if you put it together the right way, then people get better.
What are the causes of failed back surgery? I mean, let's say that you're going to a good surgeon, a good orthopedic surgeon, good neurosurgeon, and you know these guys have done excellent work over a period of years, but the patient comes out. Patients, you can take it across the board, multiple people in multiple surgical settings. But why do these things fail generally? Is it the identification of the condition? It is the wrong procedure? Is it the implementation of some of the rods and screws and things that they put in people's spines? What is the most common that you see?
I think there's probably two most common scenarios. Number one is there's a nerve being compressed, and there's a lot of localized inflammation and degeneration. They do the surgery, they decompress the nerve, and that actually will handle the sciatica. But the actual back pain that they had with it has not been addressed. So I think they clean up one part, but they don't clean up the other. On the flip side, the other issue is when we do things like fusions, we will often handle the problem on the short term, but we in fact destabilize the spine by fusing it together. The spine's meant to move. So a person will say, you know, doc, I felt really good for a year and a half, 2 years, and now slowly it's coming back, and it's kind of involving different areas. So we kind of destabilize the problem and kick the can down the road. Literally.
Okay, so why is that, though? I mean, for our listeners, I get it. You know, you understand it completely. But when you're talking about destabilization, here you have a problem, and you're fusing so the problem no longer exists. What's being destabilized? How can our audience understand that this is going to be a shifting mechanism that's going to get worse?
Well, if you fuse the spine, usually it's going to be a minimum of two levels. So they'll fuse, let's say, for example, the lower two vertebrae in the low back. Well, those vertebrae don't move, so the vertebrae above it have to move more to accommodate. So now they degenerate faster.
Is this consistent in any portion of the spine?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, let's move up to the neck just for a second or two. You know, we have some of the most active movement in the neck, the cervical spine, at the fifth vertebrae level. It's the one that, any kind of car accident, that's where they get the most trauma. So they go in and they deal with those areas of irritation. They fuse that neck. Is that also going to produce other syndromes, other conditions? Perhaps maybe there was, it gets rid of the arm pain for a while, the numbness in the fingers for a while. What happens after that?
Well, then, again, like I said, usually the levels below it will start to go. So the discs will start to degenerate, which means that the space where the nerve exit is becomes less. So the person will usually get some referral into the hand again, or maybe the person just says, my neck is becoming progressively stiffer. Once you fuse it, because those joints are designed to move, then the laws of engagement are completely different. The body is no different than any other designed entity. It's an engineering feat. So when we change the laws of physics, then things change in accordance, and usually that's in the wrong direction.
And that's where the ghost comes out of the closet and begins to bite. My guest in studio, your host this Wednesday evening, August the 8th, 7 p.m. at the Results Center for Healing in Fairfax, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor. He's going to be talking to you about failed back surgeries, or, you know what, if you're contemplating surgery and your doctor's saying, well, this is the next step, this is the class that you really need to be at, because he's going to show you why and what can be done and maybe other things that you need to think about, you know, before you make that decision. Because once you make that decision, once you're cut, you're cut. And now you have these progressive degenerative conditions that may occur over a period of time. August the 8th, 7 p.m., Roselle Center for Healing. Go online at rosellecare.com or simply call 703-698-7117. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. Indeed, we're in the studio. My guest today, your host this Wednesday evening, the 8th of August at 7 p.m., the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning. We're talking about failed back surgeries, and unfortunately it happens way too often, and it's a situation where, you know, there are times when surgical interventions are heroic and they need to be done, but they're very limited, in my opinion. And we're talking about what happens when they don't work. And many of you have had surgical procedures that basically either over time have caused you other problems that didn't exist before, or the problem never went away, or, you know, it went away a little bit, but not enough to give you any relief or quality of life. Dr. Harlan, let's kind of tiptoe back into this a little bit more, and let's talk about the, you know, you started talking about different things that are not, that they don't come from the nerve primarily. It's not a crush, it's not an irritation and so forth, but there's other types of conditions that can cause the sciatica, the pain in the arm, the pain in the leg. Sometimes it's unilateral, but often it's multidimensional. What are we talking about?
Well, you know, there's other things in the back that cause pain besides just a compressed nerve, and in many cases, a person's pain is not because of a compressed nerve. We just talk about that a lot because it's easy to understand. There's soft tissue in the back that is highly vested with nerves, specifically the ligaments and the muscles there. So as these ligaments get beat up and these muscles get put under undue stress, they cause a lot of discomfort and a lot of pain. And then the person will often become antalgic, meaning that they'll adapt to the pain and hold their body differently. So all you have to do is look at somebody in your family that has chronic back problems, stand them up and look at the way that their posture is, and you'll see they're leaning to one side, one hip's rotated forward. You know, they don't move a leg quite as much as the other. This is the way that a person adapts. And as we adapt, then tissues are going to acclimate to that, and they're going to either deteriorate more or they're just going to become chronically tight. So both are just as bad as the other. The end product is the issue progresses forward, and maybe they start to develop more problems along the way.
You know, it's unfortunate that we jump to heroics quickly, whether it's medication or whether it's surgical intervention. And when there are other ways of handling this, I know that this Wednesday evening, the 8th, you're going to talk about that, and you're going to talk about what people can do, and be also to be able to differentiate when is, you know, enough relative to you've tried everything and you really need to talk to the doc about other procedures, other things that need to be done, or what can be done. You know, let's talk about the biochemical piece of these ridiculous pains, if you will. You know, I call them ridiculous, but they get into the feet, they get into the hands, and so forth. What other things can bring that about?
I mean, certainly people who have pain in both legs can have it from a peripheral neuropathy, meaning that the nerve, after it passes out from the spine, is getting irritated, and that can either be because there's some sort of compression between muscles, or it can be an inflammatory or an infectious situation. So things like Lyme's disease, things like diabetes will cause a lot of nerve-related pain, which might simulate the effect of having a disc in your low back, when in fact it's not a disc.
So the same presentation, the same syndrome biochemically can show up, and it has nothing to do with the spine itself. It's just the biochemistry of the body has been irritated, or the immunological function of the body has been irritated, and unfortunately it's missed often.
It is missed often, and especially when it comes to, you know, these peripheral neuropathies, it's easily, they can blame it on blood sugar levels when they're a little bit high. Well, maybe they're not high enough to cause that, and it's something else. Or maybe it's blamed on, you know, other types of processes. So you need to be aware that there's a lot of things that cause these presentations in the body, and you need to ferret them out to figure out which one is actually causing it.
So, you know, a patient presents themselves, and this is something that you and I have both seen over a period of many years. They present themselves, they got pain in their legs and their calves down into their feet, and their feet tingle all the time, and they're starting to lose sensory perception. But when you do blood work, they may have a level of blood sugar level that is, you know, we'll say is 102, which is outside the normal range. But their A1C is okay, which is a 3 months measure average of the glucose. Can that still be a peripheral a problem due to a diabetic pattern?
It could be
something else?
Because elevated blood sugar, it clogs up nerves. It's called glycation, which means that this sugar molecule will actually bind to a protein molecule, and that could be in a nerve, your kidneys, your eyes, you know, any of those areas. So even though we're getting these fluctuations in blood sugar that don't elevate that A1C, again, like you said, the 3-month marker, we can ride this roller coaster enough to where the sugar has got to go somewhere, and it starts to attach to these nerves. And additionally, it causes us to have insulin spikes. And we know that when we have insulin spikes, it's a great likelihood for us to be inflamed as well. So we kind of get this crosstalk between the blood sugar and now the nerve and the insulin. So you look closely at that, and maybe you want to expand on your diagnostic testing at that point to see if the person has reactive hyperglycemia or reactive hypoglycemia to find out if they're having a day-to-day problem as opposed to a 3-month problem.
Let's hold that thought. We're coming up to the halfway point of the program, and we have to be respectful and allow people who bring you this program a moment to talk to you. That you listen to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. Indeed, we're in studio. My guest, your host, this Wednesday evening, the 8th at 7 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing in Fairfax, Dr. Harlan Browning. We're talking about failed back surgery and failed back surgery syndrome, if you will. But more importantly, even when do you really need to look at surgical intervention, and is it necessary to begin with? And that's going to be the topic of this Wednesday evening's program. It's like, what can you do before your doc says, got to cut? And so many of you are on medications. They say, well, the medication doesn't work anymore. It's time to fuse you. Not necessarily so. Again, welcome, Dr. Browning. It's something, unfortunately, that you and I see on a way too often basis. We see people who have had surgical interventions, and they're still in tremendous amount of pain. Matter of fact, the 50% generally of all people who've had surgical procedures never resolve their problem completely, or sometimes it gets worse.
Yeah.
And that's an unfortunate situation. Additionally, there are so many things that you can do prior to taking all these heavy narcotics, these codeines, let's take it from that point of view. A patient comes in, and let's identify the patient at this point that may, in fact, need surgical intervention. You know, how many of those that you actually see that you see straight off the bat and you say, there's nothing I can do for you, you need surgery?
Well, I don't think it's a lot of people, but I think it falls into two categories. And this first category, it holds true for a lot of problems. The person just waits way too long to seek help, meaning that they are usually older and they have excessive amounts of degeneration in the areas involved. And that could be their back, that could be their knee, or you know, multiple areas in the body. The issue with that is that articulation, that joint, has become so beat up and so unstable that there's not a ton that can be done. So I think that's the one group that you often have trouble treating. It's because they've waited 10, 20, 30 years, and then they eventually go to the doctor, and the doc says, well, there's nothing left for me to do here. The second one that possibly would need the surgery is the younger guy, you know, maybe 30s to 50s, who's lifting something heavy and he blows a disc out and he significantly herniates it so much that the disc actually separates and maybe moves into an area that it shouldn't be.
Fully sequestered,
yeah,
away from the annulus.
And that could be a medical emergency depending on where it gets. But again, that case, the guy who herniates the disc that needs immediate surgery is very infrequent. I might see that guy once in 8 years, but I see more and more folks that just don't do anything about their back, or they just take medication, and then they finally get somebody to look at it, and the area is so destabilized and so degenerative that it becomes really difficult to you know, rehabilitate it. So I guess the take-home message is, you know, when you hurt yourself, have it investigated and do some sort of rehabilitation to make it stronger and make sure that it doesn't come back again.
You know, here's an interesting commentary that I want to follow up on, and just basically, it's about emergency situations that require surgery right now. And when we're talking about the low back, we're talking about loss of bowel control, we're loss of urinary function. We're talking about legs going out, and now you can't stand anymore. You just kind of, boom, you're gone, and you have no functional capacity. Now, we're not talking about due to pain. We're talking about motorical function. You can't move. You can't stand. You have not, that has to be, that's a right now situation. That wasn't progressive. That's something that happened immediately.
Yeah, I would throw in there fracture. Person's in an automobile accident, they fracture their spine. That needs to be stabilized because the spinal cord is right there, and if it's compressed, we're in trouble. And certainly for people who have some sort of primary cancer to the bone or metastatic cancer that's coming from prostate or somewhere else in the body, that many times that has to be operated on because that tumor is just going to get progressively bigger and spread.
Yeah, and then at some point you may be too late completely and you've lost everything. My guest in studio, your host this Wednesday evening, the 8th of August, 7 p.m., Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor. He's going to be talking to you about failed back surgeries, but also how can you avoid surgery? You know, what can you do to stem this off? Do you have other options? You know, is that pain in your leg, that loss of function, that numbness, that inability to get up, is that an indicator that, you know, there's something going on that you have to pay attention to? But more importantly, what can you get done about it? Take two aspirin and call me in the morning is not the bellwether here. This is not something that you should be doing because it's, as you've said, Dr. Browning, it progresses. It gets worse and worse and worse over time.
Yeah.
There's a condition, you know, chemonucleosis, where there's actually a tearing of the disc material, and you start seeing a cascade of chemistry coming off of the disc itself, and it starts burning. And so how do you identify that, and is that something that can be stabilized? Or should it be stabilized surgically, or is it something that should be done naturally?
You know, What you're referring to is called an annular tear. There's an outer part of the disc called the annulus fibrosus, and it's, like the name sounds, it's relatively tough. It's fibrotic, and that's important because it holds the inside of the disc in this part called the nucleus pulposus, which is similar in consistency to toothpaste. So I think it's grossly underreported on MRIs that people have these annular tears, and I've had many MRIs come back where I'll call the radiologist to have him double check and that there's an annular tear, and he'd be like, yeah, there's an annular tear there, but it's not that big of a deal. I don't know about that. I think it's actually a really big deal, especially in folks that get the MRI. It looks pretty clean. X-ray looks pretty clean, but darn it, this person still has a lot of pain because there's nerves that go to that outer part. And like you said, if it's chronically torn and we're kind of leaking, so to speak, these inflammatory chemicals all the time, the person is definitely going to have pain. And then they're going to go into that antalgia that I spoke about before. They're going to do things differently.
They have to, because basically what's taking place, it's burning the nerve, or it's even irritating the spinal cord, depending on where the tear is in that disc. And, you know, years ago, back in the day, we were initially educated, saying I was, I've been in practice a lot longer than you have, that the disc itself didn't have a lot of neurological fibers. Now we know that the disc itself, the annulus, the outer portion of the disc, has probably more neurological input than anything else within the disc space.
Yeah, and certainly that same nerve goes to there's a ligament there called the posterior longitudinal ligament. It goes to that, and it goes to these small muscles called the multifidi, which are really the core muscles of our back. And unfortunately, these are the ones that get cut when we have the fusion done or when we have a laminectomy. So that in itself destabilizes the area just as much, because we got to remember there's muscles. Every muscle in the body crosses a joint. That will tell you how important the muscles are for joint function. Well, there's a lot of reciprocity. The joint really dictates how healthy the muscle is. So we go back and forth. So you can pick your poison. Is it we have arthritis in the joint? Do we have weakness in the muscle? Do we have both? You've got to rehabilitate and assess both components if the person's going to really truly get better. So
when we're dealing with something like this annular tear where you've got all these chemistries that are coming in, they're burning the neurological signals, if you will. We'll put it that way, because now it alters its course all the way through. It fixable?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's definitely fixable. Again, it's big picture stuff. We hope that it's not that person that's bone on bone and there's nothing left to handle. But for the majority of the folks, they can improve their situation and in many cases alleviate the pain. But you're better off doing it now than later.
You know, the interesting thing in my experience over the years is that I see a lot of these tears. And sometimes they're modified by telling the patient, you have to be at rest. But when you add other pieces of supportive natural therapies to it, from acupuncture to low energy light laser, bracing the area so they can't irritate, they begin, and also modifying dietary input, because if the body's acidic and is highly inflamed due to nutritional irritation, it just compounds the problem, makes it far worse than it would be otherwise.
Yeah, so that's an extremely important point here. It's rare nowadays, unfortunately, that we see a person come in over the age of 50 who just has back pain. They have back pain and have elevated cholesterol. They have back pain and they have diabetes. They have back pain and this and that. And they're almost always on medication. So we have these what's called comorbidities. We have these other problems on top of the back pain that can complicate it. And in addition to that, now we have these medications that basically can sabotage normal physiology and either amplify the effect of pain or inflammation, or start causing our nerves to do things in inappropriate fashion. So, boy, it's like it's a devil's cauldron at this point, and you see it every day. So a lot of folks with chronic leg pain that maybe have a little stenosis, who have high cholesterol, it may be that statin drug that's causing that leg pain that your doc said was the stenosis. So you want to double check all those medications and see how they react with a person, because everyone's individual.
You know, a patient came in actually this week, a couple days ago, and was complaining about this bilateral leg pain. And the doctor says, you have a herniated disc. And on x-ray, on an MRI, shows this narrowing of the discogenic space. And I put the patient through, you know, the normal testing that we do and tested muscles, did a lot of neurological evaluation. And what I noticed was that there was abnormal stimulation of to be able to produce the same pain, meaning that I couldn't the things I normally would do to get the pain to produce itself along a very specific gradient or line, I wasn't able to do it. So here's this patient that I had to go back then. I said, how long have you been on the statin? And that was the piece I didn't tell you in the beginning. And he said, well, my doctor put me on it about 30 days ago. I said, oh, how long has this pain been getting progressively worse? And he says, over the last couple weeks. And I said, isn't that interesting? So I pulled up all the side effects of this one drug that he was taking, which was Effexor. And, you know, and in addition to that, I can't figure out Effexor and Crestor. Why is somebody on two different, you know, medications to handle that thing? And I showed him, I said, here's the side effects. And I said, at your age, it's unlikely that you need these anyway. And because he was male, I said, here's a study that was published some years back in the New England Journal of Medicine that says that you have to treat 100 guys with a statin for 5 years to prevent one heart attack. So the effectiveness rate of using a statin to control cholesterol and plaquing and so forth is really ineffective, but it does have some very serious side effects, and leg pain and body ache is one of them that shows up all the time.
It certainly can be, yep.
So when you have a patient like that, you know, you have to be able to treat both ends of it. You have to be able to minimally cooperate, or at least show the patient the data so they can support themselves.
Yeah, I mean, and it really goes back to the mantra in the office and in our profession, where we talk about treating the structural, the chemical. That would be, you know, the dietary changes, or, you know, medications, or what the person's doing to themselves as far as eating, drinking, things that they breathe in. And in some cases, the emotional aspect. There's compelling research out there that shows that a large majority of people who have low back pain, they call it emotional backache. So, I mean, you can't forget about that piece, especially when the person's been to a zillion different practitioners. Well, maybe there's an emotional component that was never identified that's just propagating this and moving it forward, and the person's just getting more meds or more unnecessary procedures done. So, big picture stuff.
Okay, so you opened that trap door. Let's talk about it a little bit. Let's talk about that emotional back pain or that emotional neck and shoulder pain. What are the triggering mechanisms? Why does it go to the back? you know, patients will ask you, you know, I say, well, you have a stress component that's making this thing much worse. Why there?
I mean, you could go into a primitive fight or flight mechanism, which usually means that the muscles that flex our body become tighter because we want to curl up into a ball. That's the way we go into a fight or flight mechanism. So if we're always engaging these flexors because we're always tense, then that comes at the expense of the muscles that do the opposite action, the extensors becoming a little bit weaker, so to speak. Well, we want a nice symbiotic relationship between all the muscles in the body, so an imbalance from front to back or side to side will cause further instability.
Let's hold that thought. We're coming up to a break. We'll be right back after some important messages. Don't go away.
105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizal live, as you do every Sunday at high noon on the Eastern Seaboard. Those of you who are on the West Coast, thank you for listening. Do the math. And again, ongoing input from armed forces. I don't know how you all are listening to us, but you do, and I try to get back to you as best I possibly can. And thank you so much for taking care of all of us. We really appreciate your service and your contribution to the things that we love, and it's called this country. My guest in studio, Dr. Harlan Browning. We're talking about failed back surgery and the things that you need to know about that. This Wednesday evening, August the 8th, 7 p.m. at the Results Center for Healing, Dr. Harlan will be presenting a whole program on, you know, what you still can do to reverse this stuff and make a difference and what you can do to prevent surgical intervention. It's really an opportunity. Those of you who heard him speak before know this man is an amazing encyclopedia when it comes to information, but more importantly, he's a skilled practitioner above most. Give us a call, 703-698-7117. That's 703-698-7117. And or go on rosellcare.com. That's rosellecare.com. And scroll down. It's about 40% of the way down the page, and I'll show you the an area that you can register. You just hit register now, and we will confirm your registration. Dr. Harlan, let's talk about this a little bit. What are you going to be doing Wednesday evening? Why should people come to this? I mean, is it just informational-based, or are they going to walk away with something that they can say, I can do something about this pain I'm in?
Well, we're going to certainly give people a ton of information, but I hope to give them some options to improve their situation. If you've ever been to one of my talks, you know I'm going to give you the basics behind the why. I think if you understand the way the spine works and you understand what causes pain, you'll get to a place to why you know where you are. Now, having said that, we need to talk about the different types of common surgical procedures so we can look how that actually changes the body itself. From there, we can kind of reverse engineer it, so to speak, and say, okay, this is where we are after all these years and all these procedures. How can we undo some of the damage that's been done? How can we preserve what's there? And how can we, improve our scenario? So we'll definitely talk about some of the hands-on physical things. We'll talk about some of the biochemical, dietary changes, some of the nutrients that I really like to use for these types of patterns. And I always touch on ergonomics, meaning that there's people just sabotage themselves because of the way they sit, they stand, they sleep, they do it over and over all day. It's little micro traumas and they wonder why their low back gets progressively worse when their chair at work is horrific.
You know, one of the highest rates of disability, interestingly enough, is in our profession after being there many years because we're over tables all day long. And a lot of guys are bent over. We're using our arms and hands. And some of our guys are foolish enough not to protect themselves by working out.
And it goes to other professions. I can't tell you, you know this too, how many hygienists and dentists that we see. It's because they're always bent over a patient and they're usually always on the same side of the chair. So they're bent and turned the same direction all the time for, you know, some guys been in practice for 40 years. That's tough on their body.
It is. And you talk about, you know, changes in spinal integrity and conformity and so forth, and they really end up in real trouble. You and I both have patients from those professions that suffer significantly with, hand numbness. And can you think about a dentist who has been in that position for a long time that hasn't taken care of himself and can't hold on to the instruments?
Yeah.
I mean, that all by itself is problematic. This Wednesday evening, evening, the 8th of August, 7 p.m., Dr. Harlan Browning is going to be your presenter, your host at the Results Center for Healing in Fairfax. Join us. I promise you it will be a night that will give you a tremendous amount of information, and you'll go away with, oh, I can really turn this thing around. I don't have to suffer with this pain on a continual basis. Yes, even though that you've had your back cut on, your neck cut on, there's a whole lot more that you can do effectively. We're coming up to that part of the program where we have to say, see you next week. Remember, we do this for you. We love you all. See you later. Bye.